Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. This is Mark, your host, and today I am joined by Gaji Balakanishan with Midwest BioAg. Man, thank you for being here. It's super good to have you on.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. Super excited for it.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to having you on here for quite some time, because this is one of those interviews, guys, that we get to learn from somebody who didn't grow up like many of us in the traditional ag space. And so at the end of the day, we're all running businesses and we're all managing people and leading people. So a lot of that's the same. It's always interesting, though, to get different perspectives from different people. So I'm excited about this. Let's get into it. What does it mean for you, sir, to be intentional?
Yeah. I think being intentional is all about being thoughtful and kind of understanding where you're headed. And I'd say that certainly at the top and in a kind of a dynamic environment, it's really easy to just go into firefighting mode and just go to from one kind of emergency to the next, or the first thing in front of you to the next. And throughout life, every time I've tried to enter that mode, or I just entered it, didn't try, it just happened. I found myself just spinning my wheels quite a lot. And I have to remind myself, I got to take a step back. You have to carve out time to figure out what you're doing and put some thought into it, because it's just not an efficient way to work. It's not it's not usually a sustainable way to live.
Yeah, I concur. Strong statement to start off with. So where do you find yourself sometimes spinning your wheels? If there's a trigger or something that happens that causes the wheels to spin, what is that for you?
I think it's generally this sense of being overloaded and not being able to do everything you have to do. And you just kind of, I mean, personally, I compensated for those situations by just not sleeping, you know, just trying to just grind through it. And it's brutal. And, you know, I always found my efficiency just dropped off a cliff. At a previous company, I was known for being the person who discovered our email server was down between 2 and 3 a.m. because I was so often trying to send emails at that point in time. And, you know, I got a reputation for working like that, but it was, I don't know, 30% efficient or productive. There's a lot. Yeah. You can't live like that, you know? So I think it's something that just kind of came across of, you know, you can go for, there's certainly times when there just literally aren't enough hours for something that's critically important and you just try and do it. It's kind of the investment banker model, right? And I came from the world of finance, came from Wall Street, and I was very much used to that. That was an expectation. So it's kind of ingrained, but at the same time, it's, you know, a very different environment from being a junior banker on Wall Street.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very, very much true. And, you know, that so many people are so stuck in the grind that it almost becomes the identity, right? I'm sure that was true for you, that it becomes, if you've got a reputation of being the 2 a.m. email guy, and that helped you get ahead or helped you get some notoriety, now so we've become addicted to that, that personality, that stereotype that we've now been labeled with, because it's probably getting us results. But like you said, you're only operating at 30% efficiency.
Yeah.
So, you know, what if you were just doing the same thing, but during a more productive time and being healthier?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There are consequences to it. And I certainly felt that.
Yeah. By the way, I see that all across the broad scope of agribusiness, a lot of people just grinding, especially during certain times of the year. And there's certain times of the year where we got to go, but that doesn't have to be every single month. Yeah. Right. So it ties back to one of the first things that you said, which was about knowing where you're headed, being thoughtful and knowing where you're headed. Well, I think most people will equate that to where they want to go in business. What do you want for yourself? What do you want for your health? What do you want for your relationship, your marriage? You know, like the other things that matter too. Like that's to me all part of the intentional leadership model for sure. All right, let's talk a little bit about talent retention and what you're seeing in the space. So one of the things I like is you get a little bit of an inside out or outside in perspective from your standpoint. So what's working for you? What are you finding as it pertains to bringing intention into attraction and retention of talent?
Yeah, for sure. It's relative to who we are and kind of how we're positioned in the industry. If you think about it, Midwestern BioAg's kind of been, let's just go with the term regenerative agriculture and say we've kind of been a regenerative ag company since our inception. So there's a lot of kind of interest in that space. There's a lot of younger people looking for something different in ag. And we represent that. You know, we're trying to be change agents. We're trying to find people who are frustrated in the industry and want to affect change themselves, be part of something like that, an organization with a history and really proof of being that, and not just being marketing money behind some fancy new VC initiative. Right. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where we're at. Now, I say that we are, we're two things. We're an independent ag retailer right now. And ag retail is just a brutal business to be in. You know, mm-hmm. it's hard. It's going to keep getting harder. And I think a lot of the strains on the industry that everybody faces, we face acutely, the bigger are getting bigger, they're harder to compete with, and they offer kind of more. And so, we don't want to fight that head on. So what we're trying to do, back to my previous point, is find the people that don't want to be a part of that and bring them in. Because the last thing you want to do is find somebody who's kind of a rock star, but doesn't want to do what you're trying to accomplish. You know, if you have to go through a recruiter, you waste the recruiter fees, you waste time. Nobody has time to waste in this industry. And then you're just back at the beginning. And, again, I think it's part about being intentional about talent, right? You have to have a plan for who fits and who's going to get you from where you are to where you're trying to go.
Yeah. How do you determine that for a business like yours, right? Because you could very easily just go down the traditional pathway and you're trying to redefine that, if I'm reading you right.
Yeah.
So how do you find the people that support that? What is that for you?
I focus on transparency. I tell them upfront, this is where we're at and this is what we're doing. And this is how I think we're going to get there. And, mm-hmm. I hate the idea that somebody comes in and gets surprised by something. I want them coming in eyes wide open and saying, yeah, I want to do that. I left a really good situation myself to come here because it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. Now, did I know everything about what I was stepping into? No. Would it have changed my decision? Probably not. But, I don't want anyone else to have to kind of face that burden. I'm at the top. It's a different situation for me. Everybody else, I think, they just have a different risk reward balance. And so I want them to come in feeling really good about their decision and not immediately have to start diverting attention to looking for something else.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I love about what I'm picking up from you right now, Gaji, is around just saying this is who we are, this is what we stand for, and you can be okay with that and be on the bus, or there may be a better bus for you.
Absolutely.
Right. And Absolutely. A lot of leaders really struggle to say that. A lot of people really struggle to be. So part of being intentional is being unapologetic for what it is that you're after, right? So we're talking about, okay, yeah, this is what I want. But that's okay. Sometimes people are apologizing for what they think they want. I want to change the game. I want to change the way we do business. I want to make this better. I want to make this inherently better long-term. And we believe that internally. Maybe we had that internal conversation, often I think we end up judging ourselves. We judge others based on our best intentions for ourselves, but we judge others on their actions in many cases.
Oh, for sure. For sure. We know what's going on in our own heads, and nobody else has that benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this, and our coaching programs and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. Talk to me a little bit about, how you build culture around that then. So, hey, we're shifting, we're changing. Does that become part of the culture? How do you do that intentionally to then have that end type of culture that you want to have?
Yeah, for sure. The first step, I think it's three steps. The first step is, defining what it needs to be. What do you want to foster and what that looks like. The second step is communication, right? You have to be really open and repetitive about it. And I think, recent learnings for me, you have to start calling out the good and the bad. And how give people examples. And a lot of it is change management, right? I'm assuming in general that's going to be a change management question because you're building the culture, right? So people aren't used to it. And in a lot of cases, they're probably used to leaders who don't know how to do that. Or maybe they just talk and they don't do, right? So
that's right there.
Often face jaded kind of reactions to whatever you talk about. It could be the best idea in the world, and they'll just say, I've heard this a dozen times before. I'm just going to keep my head down, wait until they forget, and just keep doing what I'm doing. So then the last, and I think, the most important side of it to me, and certainly in my time here, has been making sure you have a team to help execute on that culture and that change. So I found that it doesn't matter how much I talked about things and how much I tried to lead by example and just do. If I was just mostly talking to an immediate team and they weren't turning around and talking to everybody else and doing the things I expected, nothing happened. And then I would kind of revisit after some amount of time and find, people didn't even know what I was talking about, or I would say something that I've been talking about for 6 to 12 months and they'd say, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Or that's really interesting. Like, why haven't you heard of that before? I've been talking about it this entire time. And that was a huge source of frustration for me, but it's an inevitability, right? Like the weak chain in the link is where things break down. So if you don't have a team that can kind of handle the day-to-day for you and kind of take your marching orders and go, give those to the team, then it's just not going to happen.
A couple of things I was pulling out of what you're talking about here, Gaji, is the need for communication, right? The continuously, consistently communicating it. That's one big thing. And I was just talking to a client yesterday who's trying to grow their business. They're trying to grow significantly. They've grown significantly, and they went from 41 people to now 104 in the last 36 months. So significant growth. And who you were, at 41 is not who you were, who you are, and who you have to be at 104. And if you want to take that to 200, right, you're going to have to become someone else. It's a different, and so it's very intentional how you communicate, what you communicate. And so we were talking about simplicity and bringing it back to core values. So what are the core values that we expect to be around the company? But then how do you inspect, right? How do you make sure that those things are showing up, communication being a big piece of that, obviously.
Yeah.
How frustrating is it sometimes though, to come back and realize like we started this initiative, we set down this path, we were making it happen. And then 6 or 12 months later, we run into a situation where it's almost a new idea.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about.
Yep, absolutely. So here's what you mentioned something else in there, though, and I made a note of this. So sometimes in the past, a change management initiative of some kind, doesn't even have to be culture stuff, but a change initiative came up and was started and then never reinforced. And so now you as the leader, and I think this is what a lot of people are dealing with today. A lot of people have tried to implement culture over the years. And now you, the new leader, is dealing with the fact that the last person and the person before that and the person that talked about it before that and the training that they went to before that never got reinforced and fully embedded into the into the actual process, into the culture. It never got followed up on. And so now you're dealing with these behaviors where the expectations is just going to go away. They're going to stop talking about it. How do you start to get around that?
I think, you know, at least for us, those issues have typically been highly correlated to a lack of engagement by certain people. And so we've been extremely focused on engagement and getting people who prioritize engagement. Right. So it's really easy to just put out the proclamation and just sit back and say, all right, I said it, it should happen. But kind of staying on top of the situation, staying in communication with the team and making sure they understand what's going on. And then having people who are in the day-to-day sort of management oversight responsibilities, continuing to stay on top of that message is really, really the biggest thing for us. And yeah. When we've kind of spun our wheels for years before I even got here in kind of certain, you know, leadership positions on the sales side. And I think that's what it came down to is, you know, we had a lot of people who would talk and not a lot of people who would just get into the trenches and kind of lead by example and stay on top of everybody. And, you know, I've been really thrilled. I think we finally got it right. You know, I wish it happened a lot, long time ago, but, you know, no time like the present. So it feels really good. And frankly, it's been a learning that I need to make sure that I check in with those people kind of two steps down on a more regular basis. Mm-hmm. So they hear from me, they hear what's on my mind, and they can give me direct feedback. And prize transparency. I let people be as transparent as they want with me. You know, sometimes they can go off on a tangent I don't exactly have time for. I just let them know that. But, you know, it doesn't really matter if their opinion is wrong. It's their opinion and it affects how they behave, right? It doesn't matter if they don't understand the reality. Part of their opinion, you know, their opinion is part of reality, right? So if they don't understand something that they should understand, it's going to affect how they act and how they perform. So you still have to deal with it. You can't just brush it aside.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so honorable to say, because if we're not really listening, if we're just looking beyond it all the time and sort of glossing over the fact that people have opinions other than the ones that we have told them they should, or that we would like them to have, right? It slows down the process. It doesn't mean that we have to change what we're doing, but how do you make sure people feel heard? I think that's really interesting. That's a really interesting challenge that people need to really think about. Leaders need to think about, how do we be intentional about making people feel heard?
Yeah. And I think to your point, it's not just the, what are we doing? It informs how should we do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you get that buy-in? How do you get them to start to open their eyes? Maybe it's, you have to have them spend time with somebody else who's seen the success and they can kind of advocate for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff, man. All right, well, let's shift gears a little bit. That's the big heavy stuff. That's the culture stuff and the talent stuff. Let's talk about you a little bit more today for the rest of our time. So, what's been the biggest hurdle you've had to overcome over the course of your career as a leader?
For sure, it's been kind of the change management on the people side. So if you think about, you know, most ag retailers are understaffed, right? Because of the nature of the business, you can't have the staffing for peak demand year round. You have to find other ways to utilize people. So pretty much everybody compensates by just having to go beyond kind of a sustainable capacity in those peak times. So then you end up having a lot of stressed out people. And then how do you keep them around, right? You know, I think about people on two axes. One is kind of performance, the other's on culture. Because I saw this at kind of my last employer, that there'd be, you know, you could have high performers, you could have people who are kind of average, didn't seem to bring a whole lot to the table, but they seem to focus more on the culture side. And it was kind of interesting, like people who would have like food days or potlucks and just kind of decorate the office. And, you know, they would easily, their performance would easily be replaced. But it's one of those things like appreciating an icebreaker. You know, it sounds hokey and just kind of a waste of time until you get into it. And then you look around and you see people are just kind of more lighthearted and smiling and having a good time. And it really landed with me that those people have an outsized impact, just not in a traditional way. So, you know, the goal is to have somebody who's at least average on culture and average on performance. And so it's like the four quadrants, low and high performance, low and high culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, the bottom left quadrant, you can't tolerate. Everybody else, fair game. And the dream is to find people who bring both to the table, but they're the diamonds in the rough. So, you know, I bring that back to your question and say, there have been times when I've said, or I've thought to myself, you know, I just don't get enough out of this position. You know, it's like I'm making up for it myself and with my own time, and there's a cost to the company for doing that. And I've had to kind of prioritize and think, all right, this person just, you know, keeps this place going. And it doesn't matter if they're not as good as I want them to be. They are kind of a key part of the culture of this company. You know, a lot of first in, last out sort of people, maybe they work slowly, but they always work, right? They're always going to try, and I never have to question their effort. And so I prioritize those people. And then I also prioritize not making changes that unduly burden them.
Mm-hmm.
If they're already the first in and last out, and I, you know, cut somebody else out of the equation and they're the ones who have to pick up the slack, there's not a lot of slack left in their lives. And they're kind of, you know, it's not 9 to 5. It could be 7 to 7, right? For them to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's certain things you can tolerate, certain things you can't, but it's a roll of the dice to how much more people can handle and for how long.
Right. This is a super interesting take. I don't know if I've heard anybody bring that up yet, which is looking, you've got those people that are staples of the culture that you want to see, and they may not be the A player that you could maybe recruit in, but they're more important as a B player because they make the culture that you want happen.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I think part of it is, you know, I've kind of made the jump to the leadership position from the individual contributor position. You know, there wasn't like a middle management step along the way. So it's something it's been really recent in my mind, having lived that and looking around and thinking what affects my attitude and, you know, talking to everybody else and finding out what affects their attitudes. So I kind of jumped into this, and it's something that meant a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting observation. I would caution people to be careful, because you can start making excuses for people to be C and B players.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we have to always be evolving culture. Culture isn't just, I think people get confused. Like, culture is not a one-time definition. So this is who we are, this is what we do, and that's it. Right? I mean, it's something that has to be babysat forever.
Yeah,
And it
there's
has
a
to
living
evolve.
organism.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like a growing child. It's going to change throughout the life cycle of the business, from the toddler phase to the teenager phase, to the young adult phase, to the, you know, the prime when we're in our 30s and 40s and we should be in the prime of our life. I mean, there's culture goes through the same phase. It follows your business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very interesting. Cool. All right. Well, so that was most challenging. What's been your biggest win?
I'd say it's been when I found, again, I'll go back to people. When I found people that I thought don't fit the mold of what I'm looking for, but I can't let them go. Like, I'm going to redefine a position or an opportunity to bring somebody in. And the people I've done that for have been kind of the biggest value drivers for this company. You know, there's a dearth of talent in this industry. And when you find somebody that really fits some part of what you want, you know, it's not a perfect fit, but somebody that can absolutely help you get to where you're trying to go. I think it's really important to be flexible enough in what you ask them to do to get them on board to do that for you.
Yeah. I think that's really keen, man. Firsthand experience recently, we created a halftime role for someone and it didn't make the most sense, right? They're a shared employee with someone, but with another company who happens to be a client, and it has absolutely tripled my pipeline. So yeah, be on the lookout for non-traditional opportunities. They are all over the place if you're willing to get outside the blinders that you're normally wearing. So,
you know, it's cool. I'll kind of go a little bit more on that. So I'm a big football fan, and I have always been, I don't know, blown away by how a lot of NFL coaches operate. You know, there's so many guys who have their system, and, you know, if they don't have the right guys to implement that system, they just lose. And then hope to get people who fit that system later on. And I always thought, you know, maybe recent results are going to change this, but I always thought Bill Belichick was, you know, phenomenal at that. You know, I was never a fan of the Patriots. I went to school around Boston, and that didn't help my opinion about the Patriots. But I would say that it seemed like people would go to the Patriots and be better than they were anywhere else. They just seem to make the most out of the people they had. And I always just wondered, why doesn't everybody else do that? It seems like cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
Like you're searching, you're limiting yourself to what's available to be successful.
Do you think, is there a part of that though? Do people level up in a situation like that because there's a Brady, because there's a Jordan? You know, like I've heard stories of, you know, Jordan really, I mean, Phil Jackson sure was the coach, but Jordan set the standard for how you had to show up, for what you know. I mean, he recruited Rodman.
Yeah.
Even though Rodman didn't even start playing basketball till he was like, what, 21 or 22?
No.
And not because he was a good scorer, because he was a good rebounder. And Jordan knew that's what they needed. They needed to get the ball more on the rebound. And if they had somebody that could help him do that, he could score. Pippen could score. Right. So to me, that's kind of interesting. So as you say that, my curiosity is that is that the coach's system? Is that the organization's system? Are people just naturally rising because you have the Brady, you have the MVP, you've got the Jordan, you've got Kobe, and people just rise to meet that level of standard of play? Now, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's probably, I mean, my opinion of it, it's probably that, you know, they help people, they help their recruitment efforts because people want to be around some of those high performers, right?
Yeah.
You know, the people who want to accomplish something value being around one of those high performers. I mean, in this case, legends. And then those people are also kind of the culture drivers, some of those change agents that I was kind of talking about before, right? Where they're the ones in the trenches and they're holding others accountable and telling them to be better, but they're leading by example. You know, I think that's probably the best way to put it from my perspective.
Yeah, that to me is it's a really interesting conversation. I would love to explore that more at some point with you when we have time. So, what do you do to keep your energy up? Keep the productivity high. So now my assumption is that you're not burning the midnight oil all the time anymore. Which pro tip on that, my wife got me sleeping more when she told me that men that sleep less than 7 hours per night have the testosterone of a male 10 years older than them.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm sitting here at 42. I don't want any 52-year-old testosterone. No offense to my 52-year-old friends, but I want to keep my 42-year-old testosterone high. So any pro tips for you? What do you do to keep your energy maximized and productivity high?
I think self-awareness is really important. And so I've always, I've always been a procrastinator. I kind of thrive off of those crunch time efforts, but part of that is me understanding, this is kind of a waste of my time, or, I need to reset myself. I need to go for a walk. I prize physical activity quite a lot, although I'm not phenomenal about doing that right now. Yeah, just kind of thinking, all right, do I need to take a step back? Have I not made any progress on this topic in the last 20 minutes? Move on to something else. Maybe, a lot of cases, I just talk to people at the company because I'm frankly energized by what we're trying to do here. So just being able to talk to people about it accomplishes two goals. It helps me get energized about, the day. It helps me communicate with my team about what I want them to do. And hopefully makes them more productive at the same time.
Yeah. I love that. I love bringing it back to self-awareness, really paying attention, being aware of where you're at. How do you feel? How do you feel? And if you've been feeling the same way for too long, probably chances are you should get around someone that can help raise your standard for how you feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise we get a little stagnant. That's good. Talk a little bit about how important vulnerability is in creating that intentional work environment. I think a lot of debate on this about how vulnerable we should be, how much should we open up, what's okay to share, what's not okay to share. Yet we know that leaders that are approachable tend to be the ones that we want to spend more time with. So how does vulnerability play into creating that intentional workspace for you?
It's probably relevant to how secure you feel in your own vulnerability. And so I mentioned before, I prize transparency. So I admit a lot of things to people around here that I know some of my peers would never do. And for sure, I own up to mistakes, and it doesn't bother me because maybe it's that self-awareness side of things. So to me, it's part of reality. So I just tell people, like, I know I made a mistake on this, or I should have done something differently. And I've definitely had people tell me they really appreciate hearing that. And, I don't know how far it goes beyond that they like that they hear it, but I can't imagine not doing it. I think it's something you have to be really, really cognizant of when you're at the top, of seeming like you're ruling from the high castle. You're up in the tower, and, everybody else down below you might feel like, oh, they think they know everything. I think it's important to gain the trust of people around you. There's some leaders who are just super, super charismatic visionaries, and that's just who they are and how they live. And people kind of come along with them, maybe a more positive version of a Jordan or a Brady. But then I think, I'm just kind of be who I am. So what I do is just acknowledge reality and talk about the difficulties and talk about the vision and the positives and why it's worthwhile to go after everything. So it's kind of a package deal. If you just talk about negatives all the time, you're going to end up having people walk away feeling worse potentially. And so trying to pair up the things that went wrong with the things that are going really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great way to take a look at it. I think a lot of people really struggle to connect with those leaders who do live in the high castle, that are not approachable, that have, they're just in the door, office closed, unapproachable, those kind of things. Like, listen, if you're in leadership, people are naturally going to question. People are naturally going to distance themselves and they will always have a story. Because that's what happens. It does. I don't care if it's a small team of 3, 4, 5 people, or you're running a big company. So, you know, my question is like, how do you want to be connecting with your people? You don't have to share what you and your wife talked about before bed last night. I'm not talking about that level of vulnerability, but we can, I mean, you can be real with people and share real struggles that you've gone on and had, and be relatable, right? So great answer, and good answers all the way around today. This has been a fun conversation. But you know, any last thoughts or words of encouragement for folks that are trying to become intentional leaders?
Yeah, I think it's really important to know that you can't always win, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost certain that whatever position you're in, if you're listening to this podcast, you can't win all the time. You have to pick and choose your battles. And, you know, when it comes to prioritization, right, you have to think about, here are the things I need to get done. Here are the things that are most important for me to do, right? They're not necessarily the same, because there's the urgency, there's the impact kind of factors on both of those. And you probably can't even do all of those, right? You have to kind of pick and choose that too. And I don't know, personally, I suffer from imposter syndrome, right? I always kind of mm-hmm. feel like I'm faking it. How did I get here? What's going on? And you start to learn more and more. You start to talk to people in your peer set or grow your peer set, and everybody faces the same things, mm-hmm. right? They might not admit it. It might not be who they are. Maybe they don't question themselves, but they still have failings. And mm-hmm. that's just normal.
Yeah. Imposter syndrome is a big one, isn't it?
It is. And it's a lot more common than people realize.
Well, it's incredibly common. And it's the conversation I continue to have with myself some days is, man, like, what if they found out? Right? What if they found out how much I question myself? What if they found out that I feel sometimes like a fraud that just somehow got to have this position, this role, this responsibility?
Yeah.
And I used to go on an island, put myself on an island, thinking I'm the only one that thinks that way. Right. And then the more I started talking to other leaders and the more they would start to open up to me, I recognize that it's all of us. You know, I think that one of the biggest misconceptions about leadership is that people think that the leaders that are leading them have everything figured out from here all the way up to the top of the United States of America, the most powerful country in the world. No, like, you just have people that are literally making this stuff up as they go. Hopefully they're listening. Hopefully they have good advisors. Hopefully they have good advice. Hopefully they're making good decisions. Hopefully they're moral and well-intended. We know that's not always the case, but man, you know, isn't it interesting? Like, how so many people like you and I suffer from that imposter syndrome, that little voice of self-doubt, a little seed that always gets planted. So, man, this has been a cool conversation. You have a wealth of information. I'd say, but maybe even one of the most intellectual conversations that I've been able to have in the making of this podcast. And I greatly appreciate it, man. Thank you for taking the time to be with me.
No, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Yeah, really? Absolutely. All right. I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there was something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.